Okay, I'm recording. I just did a long update, but I wasn't recording. I must have clicked on start streaming or something, and I can't stream, so it didn't do anything. That was unfortunate. It's now November 2nd. I mean, I had a great update. I think it was one of the best updates I've ever done, and it was not recorded. November 2nd, 2022, 12:44 hours. Ward Green here. I'm not going to let it get me down. I can probably condense what I said, though, into a much shorter video than what I was trying to say. There are a lot of updates to talk about. Maybe I won't even talk about them. I don't know, because there's so many of them. And maybe I won't try to cover them all. But I learned a lot yesterday. And what was the first update I gave? I can't remember. I think the first one was I did boot eSort again today. It took 23 minutes. So you can run VirtualBox. You can run VirtualBox on Apple Silicon. It's version 7.0.2, beta 4, beta version 4 of VirtualBox running on Apple Silicon right now that I'm running. And I'm able to boot within that, within VirtualBox, I can boot Windows XP and run my program. eSort. So it took 23 minutes to boot eSort, but I'm thinking that maybe Oracle can refine the program and make it run a little faster, maybe. So maybe it'll be quicker. But it's a good thing I bought the M1 Max also, I think, because it's the more powerful processor, or the most powerful processor. It was at the time I bought it. I didn't just buy the lesser processor. I bought the most powerful. Might have been a good thing for this reason, but we'll see. But I mean, it's exciting because I haven't tried the other programs yet, because it's a beta version. So I don't want to try. I don't want to just go crazy with it. I probably want to wait until Oracle gets it refined a little bit. But I can run my program, which is phenomenal. I mean, I'm pretty excited, but it's slow. It runs slow because they have to emulate the Intel architecture. As though the instructions that the program is giving to the computer are being read by an Intel computer, but it's not. It's the Apple Silicon, so it has to create a layer, an emulation layer that acts like Intel. It interprets the instructions like Intel does, and then it has to convert them into Apple Silicon instructions to run on Apple Silicon, so it takes longer to run. That's why it's so slow, 20 minutes. But the eSort program, this is what I did say in my previous attempt to record this update. The eSort instructions, or I should say, the eSort program, it normally used to take maybe 20 seconds to boot, or it took a long time to boot, or to start up, 30 seconds maybe even 30 seconds, I don't know, but it took a long time, a lot long. The eSort program took much longer than like half a second or a split second, like some programs do to start up. Or, I mean, normal Windows programs some of them boot in half a second, some of them boot in maybe a few seconds, whatever. This one took maybe 20 or 30 seconds to boot up. I can't remember exactly how long, but I can't test it right now because my iMac's not working anymore. Well, my iMac works fine. It's just that it seems to work fine. The display seems to still work. It's just the boot drive that went bad. So I can maybe recycle the boot drive and reformat it or whatever. But it's not bad because I don't need to run the iMac anymore because I can run my programs now. It's exciting on my M1 Max, I can run my Windows programs for the first time ever. That's the update. But also, Luke Miani has a video out on his channel on YouTube where he mentions there's this company that makes a product that is a board that you put inside the iMac 2011, and it enables it to become a normal monitor, a regular monitor, which I'm very interested in, by the way. I'm not sure how much it costs or whether I'm going to do it, but. It's fascinating, and it's something I wanted to do, but because because, the 2011 iMac supported something called Target Display Mode, but Target Display Mode requires you to boot into Mac OS first, and I can't boot the iMac because the internal drive is bad. I can't boot on an external drive because my external drive went bad. I'd have to reinstall Windows or something, or, you know, I'd have to use my other Windows disk that I'm running in the studio with that older Mac OS, and I could use that maybe to, you know, I could still run this iMac if I wanted to, but I think I'd rather leave it alone. But you can convert it to a monitor instead of having it as a computer, but something that I learned from YouTube is you can actually fix the graphics cards in the 2011 iMacs when they go bad. You can bake them, take them out, disassemble, put the graphics card, the smallest part of it, you know, not the whole board, put the graphics card into your oven and bake it at a certain temperature, and you can anneal the problem and make it go away. So you can heal those graphics cards that go bad, apparently, because someone online did that. But anyway, and then you have to put it all back with the proper thermally conductive grease and so on. It's not easy, maybe, to do it, but it can be done. So that's something worth knowing. You can fix these old graphics cards on the iMacs when they go bad. I had the internal hard drive go bad on that iMac as well, but I was able to boot it from an external drive, and the graphics card in that 2011 iMac didn't go bad yet, so I don't have to do anything with it. I can just maybe not use it, so that way if I do want to use it sometime, it'll hopefully work, because I'm not running it all the time. So I don't need to run it now. That's the good news, because I've got VirtualBox runs on Apple Silicon. I can't believe that. And by the way, the weather outside is so warm, it's too hot to work. It's November. It should be cold. It's like, you know, like 17 degrees or something, 15 degrees. It's too warm to do any really hard work. And they're forecasting 7 days in a row starting today of perfect, no rain, with 25% being the maximum on one day only of probability of precipitation, which I don't believe that's going to be probably end up being that way. But we might, we might get some rain, but or something more than rain. I hope we don't get snow. But we can handle it, whatever happens. But I can manage somehow to do whatever I need to do, I guess. But I need to put my lawnmower and winterize it. Haven't done that yet. So something went wrong with my delivery of my on another topic. But let's move quickly, because this update takes a long time. I already learned that when I didn't record it the first time. Something went wrong with my work table. It was delivered, but I was supposed to get two of them. So I lost $430, basically. Maybe plus tax, I guess, or whatever. I lost some money. I could go to the manufacturer or to the seller. I could complain or do, but I decided that's not the right approach. There's a better use of my time, first of all. But beyond that, there's always a better use of time than trying to chase money, because money can sprout wings and fly away. That's one of the Proverbs, right? It's one of the principles in the Bible. When you chase money, in fact, it will sprout wings like an eagle and fly away. That's one of the things that is a Bible principle. So we don't chase money. But I'll explain why that's not such a bad thing that this happened. One thing, I noticed I don't have room for a second table, really. Now that I got that table in there, I sort of knew that already, but the thing is, it made me realize I can actually make more room in my workshop by moving all the wood that's on the floor and putting it underneath, in places underneath. That's what I should do, is reorganize it. It's just I haven't been doing it because it's a lot of work, right, to move all the heavy wood and everything. So I wasn't doing that, but I could reorganize everything somehow, because there's some other wood that's underneath one of my shelves areas near the wall in the basement workshop, where I could get all that stuff out of there, because it's not as big and heavy as the stuff I have on the floor. And then I could put the heavy stuff underneath there. I think it would maybe all go under there. All of it might go under there. But it's big, heavy ash. And I could also build my own workbench from the ash that I've got. I've got so much big, heavy ash. I could build my own workbenches. And I've got some really, really good Coulson casters that I could use for wheels. And some of them are lockable casters. I've got the ability to build a phenomenal workbench. I just have to figure out how to make it a folding workbench so I can put it away again or something so that I don't take up space in the shop. But I realized all this because somebody evidently stole my workbench or whatever. And the good side of it, there's a good side that I know it's one of the best workbenches I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's the best product on Amazon. So if anyone did steal it, they're going to get a great workbench, and I like that. I'm glad. I'm happy for them if they get a great workbench. That would be a great thing. If they do still ship it here, and I do get the second bench, they've said that they've already delivered it, so I doubt that'll happen. But if it does happen, I'd find a way to use it, right? But, I mean, I'd be able to use it because it folds up. I can put it away and use it when I want it, when I need it. But the thing is, I was able to determine, because I didn't get the second bench, that I have a bench the right height. And I didn't know until I got the first bench, the bench I got yesterday. I can lower down the bench I just got to a certain height, 34 inches, which is almost the same as the Black & Decker saw table that I have that I'm not really using, that just sits there. It's a bench I use to keep pencils on or something. You know, it's not really a bench, right? I use it to keep a couple of electronic devices and a pencil. I don't use it much. That bench now becomes I can shift that bench over when I need it and put a 3/8 inch spacer on top of it, and then it becomes exactly the right height in perfect, synchronization of heights compared to the new DeWalt table. So I can do my welding. I needed a second bench, right, so that I could have a gap between the two, and I could do welding or plasma cutting where I have support so that the plasma cutter doesn't cut the bench or whatever. I needed to have that ability. That's why I wanted two benches. I knew I needed a bigger work area. This other workbench, I can use it for that, and I never would have thought of that. And I never would have thought of rearranging my flooring if it weren't for somebody taking the $400. If somebody takes money from me, the strange thing is, I recalculate and I say, I just spent $400 on to rethink it. So I have to rethink $400 worth of stuff. So I rethought what I can do, and it also made me realize I can build a bigger dolly so I can haul my generator over to the hedge. I've got a little dolly, but the generator falls off because it's too tippy, because the wheels aren't far enough apart. So I can build a bigger dolly, and just I found the wood I can use for that, because I had to rethink this $400 loss. I've rethought maybe already a couple $1,000 worth of stuff. So I've regained more than I lost. I mean, already, that's what happens when nobody ever comes into your shop, right? And no one ever comes and says, "Hey, why is your shop, why do you have your floor covered with wood? Why don't you move that, put it away?" Nobody ever criticizes constructively, because they're not getting paid to do it, right? But nobody ever does it, at least, unless they love you, I guess. But nobody generally does it. So you basically don't ever figure out how to save money or how to gain value. Like, gaining value is the same thing as spending money. So, or losing. If I lose money, I can turn that around and use it to gain value somehow. That's the thing about money. Actually, money's a pretty fictitious thing anyway, really, but it seems to have a lot of value, in the world today. But the thing, it can, with the potential for shopping. I find it's scary, because if I don't figure out how I'm going to spend my money, then I'm afraid I'm going to spend it on something I don't want or need. So, but the other thing is, I don't regret ordering two of these tables either, because if I ordered one table, I could not have ordered one table, because I knew it was the best product on Amazon. It had the best rating. I could never have ordered one in good conscience. I had to order two because I knew I could probably use two. It was the best product. I knew it was probably, I wouldn't regret it. I didn't care, right? Whether I would use it, like, I mean, I knew I would use it. I knew I'd find a use for it if I got it. So if I get the second one, I'll find a use for it. But the point is, I could never have ordered just one of them because I knew how good it was. I knew I had a great an inkling, a great, a rough idea, a pretty good idea of how great it was as a table. So I wasn't going to just order. I could not have actually done it. I couldn't have ordered just one. I had to order two. So I ordered two. I got one. The good news is I could not have used two, even if I'd gotten two, but I couldn't have ordered just one. So this is Jehovah knows better than me, I guess. That's what happened, right? Because I couldn't have used two because there's no room. If I put the second one, stacked it out from my workbench, bang, bang, and the workbench over here, and I go bang, bang, there's no room to walk over here. So there's no, I'd have to put them end to end, you know. I'd have to put them end to end, like, how do you do that? There. Like, I can't. It's so mirror. It's so opposite. Mirrors. Mirror images. There we go. I have to put them end to end like that, which then makes it hard to get into certain aspects around my workbench. I can't get at my workbench then while those tables are there because there's tools underneath, you know, the workbench. There's a cupboard. There's stuff. There's wood stored around the bench. You know, there's all kinds of things I need to get at. Access to. So my workshop is really already, it's already determined, like it's designed and finished. It's you can't just add new tables. So adding one table when I'm doing welding, I can then fold it up when I'm done, and so one table is all I can really use because I also have this other work or saw table that's a workbench. I can use it as a workbench to augment the capabilities of the new one. And so, I mean, it's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be phenomenal, I think. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. But it really hurts when somebody steals, or it's not like it hurts. It's more like you don't know what if I order something else? Is it going to be stolen as well? You know, you don't know what's happening in the future if somebody steals something, or maybe it got lost, whatever, but I doubt it, right? It's $400 that somebody could benefit from. I'm thrilled to death if they benefit from it. That's the thing. That's the way I take it. There's another thing I ordered that never arrived. It was $18. That's why I only spent $18 on that one. But it never arrived. And, I could complain to the seller, but I don't think I will. But other people have commented that this same seller never delivered. So I don't expect that'll ever be arriving. And now I have to find out how to get a copper wire. That's what that was. I wanted to get a copper wire so I could make my plasma cutter into a pilot torch. Is that what it's called? Pilot? A pilot something. Pilot arc. Yeah. Pilot arc. Plasma cutter. I wanted to make it work like a pilot arc plasma cutter, which you can do if you have a wire to ground the nozzle. Well, anyway. What was I thinking now? What else is there in this update? Have I finished talking about everything? I think I covered a lot of things in a lot less time this time than I did the first time. It's been 18 minutes and it's still, I'm sure it took me 30 minutes the first time at least to cover all this stuff. You see the amazing thing. Oh, I know what I forgot to mention in the first update. My annuity started today. I think it was supposed to start yesterday, but it started today. So I'm getting my extra income starting today. Now I don't have to think about any more of that kind of financial stuff. And maybe I shouldn't say how much money I'm earning right now, because maybe that is some cause for people to want to, you know, think I'm rich or something like that. But I'm not rich because whatever money that's one of the things I did say in the last update too, is I'm never rich because however much money I have, I'm going to use that to try to benefit as many people as I can, right? Doesn't mean I'll just give the money away necessarily, but I'll try to be an educator and, you know, somebody who might be a good example, even. Hopefully I'll be a good example, but try to I need the money for a lot of things because I have to maintain a house, right? But I mean, there's a lot of products I need to buy. If I'm going to keep my matcha tea in my diet, it's going to cost a lot of money unless I can find a cheaper brand. That costs a lot of money for matcha tea, and it's very, very worth it in terms of the nutritional value. But it's like, I don't know, hundreds of dollars a month probably just for matcha tea. But I want to get a cheaper source, and I'm trying, considering that right now. But I spend all my money. That's the other thing. I like to spend all my money every month, because if I don't, I mean, I'm hoping I'll be able to save some of my money. But if I save it, I'll be tempted to spend it. And if I have a bunch of money, I might just spend it on something like I don't really need, maybe a new car or whatever that I don't need, or maybe something that's expensive that I can just blow money on. Because there's something about having money that makes me scared, I guess. So if someone, I guess that's another reason why if somebody does steal my stuff, I'm not going to be, I never get mad, or I'm not going to get mad or angry or yell or scream or kick or throw a tantrum or any of that stuff. It's more like I'm disappointed kind of thing, you know, in people who steal things. I'm disappointed in them. You know, I'm trying to think back. I don't think I ever stole anything in my life, but I know there was something I did that I regretted that was kind of like almost stealing, but then I didn't keep the item. But it was worse than stealing in some ways, what I did. It's the only time I think I ever did anything that's remotely like that. Like, pretty sure that's the only time. It's the only regret I have like that. It was when I was working on the railroad. We were down. We saw an old motorbike that was sitting there with the keys in it, down by the beach somewhere, out somewhere in the middle of nowhere. It was in Terrace, BC, I guess, somewhere near Terrace, BC, somewhere near where we worked on the railroad. These guys that I was with, after I left them, they got in some real trouble with the police. But when I was with them, I did some bad stuff. Maybe I was not a good influence on them, but they were not probably a good influence on me either. But I saw this motorbike, and I knew how to ride a motorbike, so I just started it. I got on it, started it, and drove it around. And it was an old bike. It wasn't in very good condition or whatever, but it wasn't mine. I shouldn't have done that. I had no business doing that. But someone had left it there. It's like, I guess I thought, well, this is anyone's. It's just here. No one's with it. Had the keys in it. Nobody was in sight. I drove the bike around, and then the last thing I did was something I really regret, though. I don't know why I did it. I ditched the bike somewhere, not even on the main road. Or it was like in the bush somewhere. I just sort of left it there. Dropped it on the ground and left it in the bush where nobody's ever going to find it, kind of thing. It was, I don't know why I did that. I don't know whether, I guess Jehovah knows whether anyone found it or what happened. I don't know right now, but that's a bad thing I did. I mean, to me, that's like the worst thing maybe that I ever did. Yeah, it might be. I don't know. It's one of the worst things I did to do with stealing anything. Anyway, I never stole anything. But that certainly seems like that is stealing. But we never saw the owner. That was the problem. You shouldn't steal things from somebody even if you think they're rich. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't. Because it does something to your soul, right? Like, it takes a part of your soul. You don't want to do that. It's a bad idea. It's the wrong thing to do. So, I mean, I think if somebody steals your stuff, I mean, I think the best attitude is to say, you're welcome, take it. You know, like, that's the best attitude, because you're welcome to have it, you know, because that's the only way you're going to make an impact on that person's life, on the thief, you know. That thief is going to go, wow, I didn't expect that reaction. Because, I mean, possibly, hopefully that's going to be the reaction, because the thief is, part of the reason people steal things is because they want to see what your reaction is, too. Because they think, they steal from you because they think you're a bad person. They steal from you because they think you're too rich, or you're too stingy, or whatever. You know, they steal from you because they think you're bad for some reason. They steal from you. So this is an opportunity to give a witness to them and say, you're most welcome to it. I mean, this is the thing. It's, I mean, nothing that I have is really mine anyway. And the thing is, everything that I have was given to me by somebody. Everything. But that's true of all of us. I believe there's nothing we have that's not given to us. Even our own life was given to us by somebody. We didn't get our own life for ourselves. It was created by somebody, right? Our parents had to procreate, but we had to create. We had to be created. We didn't create ourselves. We had to come into being by the agency of a creator. That's the way it works. That's why the idea of creation makes so much more sense than any kind of nonsense about evolution, which is complete idiocy, and it doesn't lead to the allowance for logic either. If everything is random, there's no logic possible. Only the logos, or logic, you know, can account for, or I should say, only creation can account for logic. That's the thing. Only creation can, because God created the logos. God, Jehovah, creates the logos, the word, personified by the word of God, even. It's, the word of God, the Bible, is the personification, or the, you know, it's like prefiguring and explaining what the logos was like in the pre-human existence of Jesus, the logic. And then that creature came to earth as Jesus, fulfilled the scriptures, proving that he was in fact this creature called the logos, or the logic. But there's no logic without a creator. The creator created the logic. That's the whole idea behind what logic is. There's no logic that comes from chaos or randomness. There is no logic in that. And there is no such thing as a random number generator, as I explained, I think, in my last video. That's right. Even the man who taught me about statistics taught me, because he worked for the medical branch of atomic energy, J.R. Johnson, Dr. J.R. Johnson, taught me this, that there's no such thing as a random number generator. There's no such thing as randomness. We have to fake it and try and make up something that's random. There is no such thing. That's the problem. Nothing is random. Okay, so maybe we can start our study now. I'd like to do music every day, but I don't know what we can do today anyway, but there's always something. There's always Oscar Peterson to do, right? But, I mean, there's something like, there's a thing called Oscar Peterson, We Get Requests. It's a playlist called We Get Requests, Oscar Peterson. They're all the songs come from Oscar Peterson Legacy Channel. But this is We Get Requests by Oscar Peterson. Maybe we can play something here. I don't know. What is this song? Oh, it's the Quiet Nights. Is it? No. Let's see. Hang on. No. This is People. Let's play the People. Play this song. It's a great song. People. Oh, I've got to restart. There we go. There's no video, it's just audio. You know what I have to do? I have to switch the audio. It's going to be so much better. About it. It's a 3 minute, 3.5 minute song. So there we go. That was nice. That was really nice. But I mean, the great Oscar Peterson, and that was the Oscar Peterson Trio. Of David, Psalm 32. I guess we should start because I don't think this is what I said the last time when I had to redo, when I found out I wasn't recording. I was just about to start Psalms. And I thought we were going to have to go quickly, and we are, because we still are at 33 minutes or so. I thought we were at probably 30-some minutes at the time. My sense of time can be accurate sometimes, too, strange enough, as it is to say. So, I mean, we would just ask our Father in Heaven, Jehovah, would you please consider us and our request for your favor, and make us happy in the way that you know is good for us, not the way that we think is right, in Jesus' name, amen. You know, that's the thing. Jehovah knows what's right for me, and he knew that I didn't need that second table. That's the way I'm thinking about it. Or if I'm wrong, then maybe the second table will arrive, but if, I mean, maybe I'll still receive it, but if I'm not going to worry about, I mean, I'm completely thrilled. I'm thrilled that I have one table. That was, I just knew I couldn't order just one because I knew it was such a good product. I had to order two. There's no way, you know. So I mean, getting one was probably, maybe it was. I think it was. I'm almost certain that it was better to get one instead of two. But I could not have ordered it if I'd only ordered one. I would have had regrets. I would have thought, why didn't I order two? That's what I would have thought. You know? But if I'd, I wouldn't have regretted if I'd had two. It's just that I'm actually feeling better having one, I think, than I would have. Now that I only, seeing as I have one, I'm feeling like it's better having one. It's just weird. Anyway, of David Maskell, happy is the one whose revolt is pardoned, whose sin is covered. Happy is the man to whose account Jehovah does not put error, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. When I kept silent, my bones wore out through my groaning all day long, for day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My life's moisture has been changed as in the dry heat of summer. Selah. My sin I finally confessed to you, and my error I did not cover. I said, I shall make confession over my transgressions to Jehovah, and you yourself pardoned the error of my sins. Selah. On this account, every loyal one will pray to you at such a time only as you may be found. As for the flood of many waters, they will not touch him himself. You are a place of concealment for me. You will safeguard me from distress itself. With joyful cries at providing escape, you will surround me. Selah. I shall make you have insight and instruct you in the way you should go. I will give advice with my eye upon you. Do not make yourselves like a horse or mule without understanding, whose spiritedness is to be curbed even by bridle or halter, before they will come near to you. Many are the pains that the wicked one has, but as for the one trusting in Jehovah, loving kindness itself surrounds him. Rejoice in Jehovah and be joyful, you righteous ones, and cry out joyfully, all you who are upright in heart. That's Psalm 32. And that section, verses 8 and 9, it says, that's a quote where Jehovah's telling David, I shall make you have insight and instruct you in the way you should go. I will give advice with my eye upon you. Do not make yourselves, or he's not just telling David, he's telling us as well, do not make yourselves like a horse or mule without understanding, whose spiritedness is to be curbed even by bridle or halter. So because horses or mules don't understand where they're supposed to go, we need to, you know, the rider has to have a bridle or halter on the horse to direct the horse where to go. Or the mule, depending on whichever case it is. And it's not because they're stupid, it's because they have spirit of their own, right? They have spiritedness, it says. But anyway, that's interesting. It's fascinating. So confessing sin is mentioned there in verse 5. David had finally confessed his sin. That's interesting. I never realized what I'm saying until afterward. I said my preamble, I mentioned something I did that I regretted. I didn't realize this psalm talked about this confession of sin. I didn't prepare this or anything. But my subconscious knows every single thing that I've read in the Bible, and it knows everything in the Bible in great detail. It's incredible how the subconscious can work. And I don't believe anyone else is any different, but you can certainly clutter up your brain and clutter up, maybe you can clutter your subconscious too. I'm pretty sure you can, depending on what you do day to day, how you live. You can cause your subconscious to be cluttered with things it shouldn't have in there. And or not. You can have a clean subconscious, which is better, because it can be. But I'm not sure that, I can't say for sure what the effect of different things are on the subconscious. I don't think anybody really probably understands the subconscious very well. Let's go on. But I don't know, it might be helpful to live as good a life as we can. That might help us. We're on the second, so we're going Isaiah. Look at this. This is one of the shortest chapters. I think there's a chapter in Psalms that's only three verses, maybe. I think that's true. There are certainly some, I think that's Psalm 133, actually, isn't it? But anyway, this Isaiah chapter is incredibly short, especially for one of the prophets, I think. Or maybe there are some short ones. That's a different research topic. Anyway, here's Isaiah 12. And in that day you will be sure to say, I shall thank you, O Jehovah, for although you got incensed at me, your anger gradually turned back, and you proceeded to comfort me. Look, God is my salvation. I shall trust and be in no dread, for Jehovah is my strength and my might, and he came to be the salvation of me. End quote. With exultation, you people will be certain to draw water out of the springs of salvation. And in that day, you will certainly say, give thanks to Jehovah, you people. Call upon his name. Make known among the peoples his dealings. Make mention that his name is put on high. Make melody to Jehovah, for he has done surpassingly. This is made known in all the earth. Cry out shrilly and shout for joy, O you inhabitants of Zion. For great in the midst of you is the Holy One of Israel. That's the end of it. And that was a quote right from, in that day you will certainly say, give thanks to Jehovah, all the way down to the end. Was a quote that said, in that day you will certainly say these words. Speaking to the people who will be certain to draw water out of the springs of salvation, which is an incredible saying. I didn't even know that saying was in the Bible consciously. I didn't know that. With exultation, you people will be certain to draw water out of the springs of salvation. Draw water out of the springs of salvation? That's a great metaphor. Draw water out of the springs of salvation. I'm going to have to think about and meditate on that. That's great. That's wonderful. But Jehovah is the source of this salvation. Verse 2, God is my salvation. He's the source of that. In Isaiah 12, that's what that was about. Okay, so let's carry on with John. John 12, is it long or short? Because we're on November 2. We're doing all the numbers that end in 2 now. It's a long one. A lot of the chapters are long in the Gospels, including in the book of John. Accordingly, Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, arrived at Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised up from the dead. Therefore, they spread an evening meal for him there. And Martha was ministering. But Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table with him. Mary, therefore, took a pound of perfumed oil, genuine nard, very costly, and she greased the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet dry with her hair. The house became filled with the scent of the perfumed oil. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples who was about to betray him, said, "Why was it this perfumed oil was not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor people?" He said this, though, not because he was concerned about the poor, but because he was a thief and had the money box and used to carry off the monies put in it. Therefore, Jesus said, "Let her alone, that she may keep this observance in view of the day of my burial. For you have the poor always with you, but me you will not have always." Therefore, a great crowd of the Jews got to know he was there, and they came, not on account of Jesus only, but also to see Lazarus, whom he raised up from the dead. The chief priests now took counsel to kill Lazarus also, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going there and putting faith in Jesus. The next day, the great crowd that had come to the festival, on hearing that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took the branches of palm trees and went out to meet him. And they began to shout, "Save, we pray you! Blessed is he that comes in Jehovah's name, even the King of Israel." But when Jesus had found a young ass, he sat on it, just as it is written, "Have no fear, daughter of Zion. Look, your king is coming, seated upon an ass's colt." These things his disciples took no note of at first, but when Jesus became glorified, then they called to mind that these things were written respecting him, and that they did these things to him. Accordingly, the crowd that was with him when he called Lazarus out of the memorial tomb and raised him up from the dead kept bearing witness. On this account, the crowd, because they heard he had performed this sign, also met him. Therefore, the Pharisees said among themselves, "You observe you are getting absolutely nowhere. See, the world has gone after him." Now, there were some Greeks among those that came up to worship at the festival. These therefore approached Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and they began to question him, saying, "Sir, we want to see Jesus." Philip came and told Andrew. Andrew and Philip came and told Jesus. But Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Most truly I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains just one grain. But if it dies, it then bears much fruit. He that is fond of his soul destroys it. But he that hates his soul in this world will safeguard it for everlasting life. If anyone would minister to me, let him follow me. And where I am, there my minister will be also. If anyone would minister to me, the Father will honor him. Now my soul is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me out of this hour. Nevertheless, this is why I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Therefore, a voice came out of heaven, "I both glorified it and will glorify it again." Hence, the crowd that stood about and heard it began to say that it had thundered. Others began to say, "An angel has spoken to him." In answer, Jesus said, "This voice has occurred not for my sake, but for your sakes. Now there is a judging of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. And yet I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw men of all sorts to me." This he was really saying to signify what sort of death he was about to die. Therefore the crowd answered him, "We heard from the law that the Christ remains forever, and how is it you say that the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man?" Jesus therefore said to them, "The light will be among you a little while longer. Walk while you have the light, so that darkness does not overpower you. And he that walks in the darkness does not know where he is going. While you have the light, exercise faith in the light in order to become sons of light." Jesus spoke these things and went off and hid from them. But although he had performed so many signs before them, they were not putting faith in him, so that the word of Isaiah the prophet was fulfilled, which said, "Jehovah, who has put faith in the thing heard by us? And as for the arm of Jehovah, to whom has it been revealed?" End quote. The reason why they were not able to believe is that, again, Isaiah said, "He has blinded their eyes, and he has made their hearts hard, that they should not see with their eyes and get the thought with their hearts, and turn around, and I should heal them." End quote. Isaiah said these things because he saw his glory and he spoke about him. All the same, many even of the rulers actually put faith in him, but because of the Pharisees, they would not confess him in order not to be expelled from the synagogue. For they loved the glory of men more than even the glory of God. However, Jesus cried out and said, "He that puts faith in me puts faith not in me only, but in him also that sent me. And he that beholds me beholds also him that sent me. I have come as a light into the world in order that everyone putting faith in me may not remain in the darkness. But if anyone hears my sayings and does not keep them, I do not judge him, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. He that disregards me and does not receive my sayings has one to judge him. The word that I have spoken is what will judge him in the last day, because I have not spoken out of my own impulse, but the Father himself who sent me has given me a commandment as to what to tell and what to speak. Also, I know that his commandment means everlasting life. Therefore, the things I speak, just as the Father has told me them, so I speak them." That was John chapter 12. There's quite a bit of energy in those words. It takes a lot of energy to speak all those words that Jesus spoke. He's got a lot of intensity in life. He was, life was overflowing in Jesus, and that's how he could perform these miracles of resurrecting Lazarus and healing blind people, sick people. He just had energy gushing out of him in a most remarkable way, and we're seeing it beautifully portrayed, marvelously portrayed in the book of John, which is well known as being a very exceptional book of the Gospels. It's a very upbuilding book of all the gospel, of the four gospel accounts. It might be the most upbuilding of the four, partly, of course, because it was written by John, who was referred to as the disciple whom Jesus loved. Apparently, John was very close to Jesus, and that's why this account is exceptional, in that the other Gospels can't claim that they were written by someone who was quite so close to Jesus as John was. John was very close to Jesus. I think we see that because somewhere in the book of John, it says the disciple whom he loved, something like that. Let's look it up. This might not find it. Right. John 19 and 26, we're going to see this. Seeing his mother and the disciple whom he loved. There's another occurrence, though. That's not the only one. Okay. I think there's another one. Oh no, I think the other one might be the disciple he used to love, something like that. Possibly. Yes, the disciple whom Jesus used to love, John 21:7. Right? And he doesn't refer to himself as John, but this is John probably who's writing this about himself. And then we have 21 and 20, the disciple whom Jesus used to love. Yeah, so it appears as at least three occurrences of this idea that John was beloved of Jesus, and the book bears his name, but he doesn't refer to his own name in the book itself. He just refers to himself as the disciple whom Jesus used to love. Well, he leaned back on the breast. That's what it is. There's a place where it says he leaned back on the breast of Jesus. Let's look that up, because that's the evidence, too, that maybe it's in one of the other Gospels. Let's see, leaned back. Let's look up leaned back. There it is, John 13:25. Yeah, here it is. This is the key here. This is the crucial part that explains this idea. John 13:23. There was reclining in front of Jesus' bosom one of his disciples, and Jesus loved him. He doesn't say it's John. He doesn't say I'm the one. But then, therefore, Simon Peter nodded to this one and said to him, tell who it is about whom he is saying it. So the latter leaned back upon the breast of Jesus and said to him, Lord, who is it? They're talking about Judas, who would betray Jesus. But anyway, the idea there that was given was the leaning back on the breast of Jesus showed how close they were. And this is, again, evidently, this is John, who never mentions himself by name specifically in these references. But anyway, that's that's the most I've ever analyzed that particular thing. I've never actually analyzed that with putting those different references all together like that. So anyway, it occurred to me there's something we can mention. This whole idea about King Herod, the King Herod who died in 44 CE, there was a King Herod in Jerusalem who died in 44 CE, and that date is very well known because of Roman history. And what was the other thing that determines that? The Jewish history? Or I'm trying to think if it was Jewish history or something else. The Roman history, first of all, and Josephus, that's right. Josephus was a Jewish historian too, but I mean, there might be some evidence in other sources, in other Jewish sources, of which I'm not aware, but Josephus, we know from Josephus and from the Roman history enough about when the particular King Herod began to rule, who ruled in starting when he conquered Jerusalem in 37 BCE, before Christ, before the Common Era, that is. So there was a Herod, and that date is very well established because Josephus mentioned details about the Roman consuls of the year in question, so that we don't have a question about when that year was that this Herod conquered Jerusalem in 37 BCE. And then there's all kinds of evidence that would point to these dates during this time of the Roman history being documented also, right, with these consuls being known. We could search a lot of other sources. The only problem is we might find some conflicting sources, too, in all of this stuff. I suppose that's possible too, but it's very widely accepted that 37 was the conquest of Jerusalem by King Herod, who that king, particular King Herod, who died in 4 BCE also, was another widely accepted date. But the king who died, there was a King Herod who died in 44 of the Common Era, which was, you know, after, it was 14 years after the crucifixion. And the proof of that, though, we can prove the crucifixion was in 30, based on 44 being the 14 years after the crucifixion, because of what Paul wrote in Galatians. It's significant, even more so than I had realized, as Brother Ekron pointed out, whether advertently or inadvertently. This 14 years referred to here by Paul, he had gone up to Jerusalem in chapter 1 of Galatians, 3 years after his revelation, which was happened on the road to Damascus, or 3 years after something that happened shortly after that revelation, whatever. But 3 years later, he went up to Jerusalem to visit, you know, whoever, but, you know, it's not relevant who at this point. We don't care who he visited for the purpose of this discussion, but let's just go to chapter 2. After 14 years, he again went up to Jerusalem. It doesn't say he went up in the interim, but after 14 years, he again went up to Jerusalem. But we know that he went up to Jerusalem in 44 CE, according to Acts chapter, we have to be very careful, but according to Acts chapter 11, for example, Agabus received some kind of revelation. He indicated through the Spirit that a great famine, he prophesied that a great famine was about to come upon the entire inhabited earth. And that's the reason why they sent, that was in verse 28, Acts 11 and 28. And then they sent Barnabas and Saul in verse 30 to bring a relief package or whatever to the brothers that was mentioned in the previous verse 29. And then when we go to Acts 12, importantly, King Herod was there at that time, according to this, at that particular time, about that particular time. But that was the time when, about that time, that he actually mistreated somebody, some of the congregation. Okay, then we come down, Herod actually dies in this chapter. In verse 23, Acts 12 and 23, Herod became eaten up with worms and expired. And then Barnabas and Saul, in verse 25, it sounds like it's happening all at the same time, or very similar time. Barnabas and Saul, having carried out the relief ministration in Jerusalem, they returned to Antioch, is where they had come from, I believe. Or were they in Damascus? Wherever they'd been, they returned, right? But wherever they'd been, where Agabus had made that statement to them, that was, I think Agabus was actually in Damascus, maybe, but I'm not sure. No, it's Antioch. Yeah, it mentions Antioch right there in 11:27. Okay, but wherever it was, they returned in Acts chapter 12. So we go to Galatians. It gives this correspondence where it says, in chapter 2, it says that Paul had gone up to Jerusalem as a result of a revelation. Well, that could be the revelation, it seems to relate to Agabus, his revelation. And that's interesting, because also later on in this chapter, it's more convincing, because later on it says that that they should keep the poor in mind was mentioned, that they should keep the poor people in mind. In verse 10, we should keep the poor in mind was what was the message given to Paul and Barnabas. So they evidently, it sounds like they, it's completely harmonious with the idea that they'd just been delivering a package to the poor on this trip to Jerusalem. So they should keep the poor in mind was mentioned. But they would be preaching generally, and it's not always going to be ministering to the poor, but they should keep the poor in mind. So evidently this was the relief ministration visit, but the other idea was it would coincide with 14 years after the year 30, which would be the crucifixion, which would be the same year that was possible. It was possible that in that same year, Paul could have received Christianity in a revelation from the resurrected Jesus on the road to Damascus. There's no conflict in the timing. But the other thing is, we know that then, after this relief ministration, Paul and Barnabas went preaching again for some number of months or years. And then they went back to Jerusalem again. And then they received something. They got these instructions about the circumcision and there was not going to be a requirement for circumcision, and it was going to be they received the updated instructions from the governing body at that time in Acts chapter 15. But certain men came down from Judea, unless you get circumcised according to the custom of Moses. So Paul and Barnabas were sent up to the apostles in verse 2 in Jerusalem regarding the dispute, right? So they went to Jerusalem again, but nowhere does it mention. Now, this visit to Jerusalem, for all we know, this could have been the same visit when they went on the relief ministration. If there's some kind of a spreading out of the account into different portions, it's possible this could have been the same one. But there was no visit mentioned by Paul between the visit he made after 3 years and the visit he made after 14 years. The three-year visit was not the ministration. There was a separate visit after 3 years. And then there was a visit after 14 years. And he didn't mention one in between. But we know there were three visits to Jerusalem. We know, according to Acts. Either that or else the account in Acts 15 is just a repetition of what happened in this other visit. But it included different information because there was maybe more that happened than just the relief ministration during that visit. That it could have been, it's possible that Acts chapter 15 is not talking about a third visit, but just the same second visit that happened after 14 years. Or it could have been a third visit, but there's no visit mentioned in between the two. And the 14 years is exactly coinciding with 14 years after the crucifixion, with the crucifixion in 30 of the Common Era, 30 CE. The crucifixion in 30 CE is apparently proven by this because Paul went up as a result of Agabus' revelation about the famine. Agabus did have a revelation. And we know Herod died, according to all the best information we have from Josephus, the secular history. Herod died in 44, and that's chapter 12 of Acts, when Paul and Barnabas were in Jerusalem with their relief ministration in 44. How else Because if Paul had gone up after 14 years and this was talking about the third visit, then that would mean Paul and Barnabas would have gone up. It would mean that Paul and Barnabas would have had to have gone up to Jerusalem previously to 14 years. That would be before the year. Well, it would either have to change when you calculate the 14 years from, or in the case that we're considering, it's calculated from Paul's revelation, or assuming his revelation was in the same year as the crucifixion, then we're calculating it from the crucifixion year. But you see how it places a very, very tight restraint on when the crucifixion could have occurred. It couldn't have occurred. It could have occurred according to this account. This alone would say it could have occurred before 30, but not after 30. In the simplest way of looking at this, there are more complex ways of looking at this, but in the simplest way of looking at it, this was his second visit to Jerusalem. It was with Barnabas. We don't know about Titus, in the other account. We don't know. If we could learn more about Titus, we might be able to find out. Maybe one of the other books mentions Titus in this second visit. If that's true, if we could prove that Titus was there and only on that visit when Herod died, was Titus there? If we could prove that, we'd really have even more evidence. But we don't know that about Titus. We just know Paul and Barnabas went up to Jerusalem after 14 years. After 14 years, without knowing when the 14 years began, but knowing that it could not have begun before 30. It's not possible. It could have been before the year 30. And we know Herod died in 44. We know that, and that's how we get 30. 44 minus 14 is 30. So, but we know they went up to Jerusalem a third time. That's the other thing. And we don't know when that was. And are we to believe that this is the third time and that he omitted the second time? It doesn't sound like it, because they talk about here about keeping the poor in mind here. And also the fact that when Paul did go up to Jerusalem here, in as he mentions in Galatians chapter 2, he didn't talk about anything in public about the good news. He said he went in private. Doesn't it? Yeah. Let's see. He mentioned something about in private. Where is it now? In private. I laid before them to see whether I was running in vain, right? Now I'm not finding it for some reason. See, you have to double check everything, because sometimes your memory can think. There it is. I laid before them the good news, verse 2. I laid before them the good news privately, however. So he wasn't going up on behalf of the brothers, or to ask about the circumcision and to get a ruling from the governing body. He was going up to speak privately about whether he'd run in vain. That was the part about the good news, anyway. It was a relief ministration. A relief ministration would not have to do with the good news. It would just be to do with the poor, helping the poor. So the good news was referred to here only in the context of privately. So he wasn't going up to get a ruling from the governing body, is what that implies there. It's very clear. He went up as a result of a revelation, and that sounds like it must have been 44, because that was when Agabus had the revelation and they went up to Jerusalem. 14 years before that would be the crucifixion, because it couldn't have been before 30 CE, according to all the other evidence that we have. 30 is the crucifixion anyway. It's correct from all the other viewpoints that we have as well, but there are some people who argue later than 30, but it can't be. It's 14 years after this, right? At the latest, it could be 31, because 14 years inclusive could be 31, but 30 fits perfectly, because we have Paul could have received the good news in 31 and it could still be 14 years inclusive. If Paul received the good news a year after Jesus was crucified, for example, but it doesn't have to be a whole year, because 14 years can include the year 30 CE. The year 30 CE seems to be proven from this, Galatians chapter 2, as being the crucifixion year. So this is Ward Green. It's November 2nd, 2022, 1359 hours, and now it's 1400 hours. And welcome to our study of the Bible and of various other things. Whatever I might be able to share with you, welding tables included and things like that. And have a great day. I love you, and bye for now.